Welcome to More Than Words, a podcast about treating the whole child, brought to you by the Reading and Language Learning Center. I'm your host, Tristan, and today I'm joined by lead occupational therapist at the Arc of Loudon / the Aurora Behavioral Clinic, Aubrey Huntsman, to discuss occupational therapy home exercises for handwriting. Fabulous topic. Hi, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fabulous. We're excited for you to be here, and I'm excited for this topic. I think occupational therapy is so interesting, and I think the home exercise is going to be very helpful. So, yeah, tell us about
you. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yes.
Sure. So, hello, everybody. As Tristan had already said, I'm Aubrey Huntsman, and I'm the lead occupational therapist at the Arc of Loudon. And the Arc of Loudon is a really big campus. It's kind of unique. So I specifically do work at the Aurora Behavioral Clinic with kids with autism. So I work closely with speech-language pathologists and also registered behavior technicians and BCBAs. So our population is very, very heavy on autism just because those fields kind of need that autism diagnosis for insurance. So we kind of piggyback off of that. And I do work a lot with kids with handwriting issues. It's actually one of my passions. I really, really like it. But I like the take that we can have on it in an outpatient clinic because it's very different than like a school setting. So I'm really excited to talk about it today.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so if people were looking for the Arc of Loudon, where are you guys located?
Yeah, so we are in Leesburg, Virginia on Catoctin Circle. So not very far from like Battlefield Parkway, like that kind of area.
Yeah.
And our website is abc.thearcofloudon.org. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook, just the Arc of Loudon, as a general, and they kind of post about each program that we have here sporadically throughout the year.
Perfect. Okay. So I'll link the website in the show notes so people can find you guys.
Okay, cool.
And it's awesome that you have, I've heard about the other projects you guys have at the Arc of Loudon. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a great resource if anyone is ever like looking for assistance in that way. You guys have so many different options.
Yes, absolutely. There's definitely a lot. I feel like when families come here, they just kind of discover like all these other resources that are not only on our campus, but also like in the community in Loudon as well. Yeah. So it's a really great place.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Like I said, I'll link you guys in the show notes so people can find you.
Okay.
Alrighty. Let's hop into the interview. So what we're talking about today, occupational therapy and handwriting. So how in the world does occupational therapy as an entity help with handwriting?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think occupational therapy, you know, you help me get a job. It's like the big one when you work with adults, right? And when it comes to kids, a lot of parents don't really know because we can work on a lot of things. So specifically with handwriting, we can work on it in a variety of ways. So there's different compensatory strategies, so like adaptations that we can help with pencil graphs, mm-hmm. or there's things like a slant board or adaptive paper that's going to help children if they don't have those skills yet. It kind of gives them the adaptations to develop those skills or just make it easier in general. So a slant board specifically, kind of just to go into one of the things, is when children have weaknesses in their hands or fingers, that's really going to affect their handwriting, right? So what a slant board does is it's kind of like if you imagine like a 1.5-inch binder kind of on its side. Okay. So it's a slant. And that's usually what I use because those are a lot less expensive than this coined term of a slant board, right? So a lot of times I just tell parents, go buy a binder, go to Staples. It's going to be maybe $20.
Right.
So you put it on its side and it raises the paper up a little bit.
Right.
And what that does is it gives the child more support at like their forearm.
Okay.
So they don't have to be, you know, out in the air when they're writing. So it gives them more support. So if they are weaker, it helps with that handwriting a little bit more. And a lot of times you see if children have a very light handwriting, that's where you can kind of see that weakness because they can't press on the paper very hard.
Right.
So that slant board really helps support them and gives them a little bit more of a legible handwriting.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. And it also helps too, with like, because it raises the paper, any children with like visual deficits, whether diagnosed or not, you know, it kind of, it raises that paper from just a flat, potentially very busy desk with our children. Sometimes there's a lot going on. And so it really helps them see it a little bit better. So even if it's like copying something or just in general, like a lot of my kids are like, wow, that's a lot easier, Miss Aubrey. I'm like, eh, simple as that, you know?
Yeah. That's a really great, like low tech way to just be a big help. And it's so funny. You don't think about how like just an inch or two closer to your face can be has such a big impact. So that's awesome.
Right. Yeah. And it's really hard for kids to like explain that, like, I can't see it, or like, you know, and so it's just something just so simple. And if it doesn't work, just take it away. But at least, you know, it's not like we changed so much and it doesn't work. We just added something little, just to give it a try. Yeah. And there's a whole other side of handwriting that this is why I think occupational therapy in the outpatient setting is so unique for handwriting.
Yeah.
Because handwriting is developmental, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't expect a child to run before they know how to walk.
Right.
Okay. So you can't expect a child to be able to write their ABCs if they can't even copy a line or a square or a circle. Right. So these are considered pre-writing strokes. And oftentimes in the schools, like occupational therapists just don't really think about those kinds of things because they're like, how am I going to help this kid in the classroom, right? It's just a different environment.
Yeah.
So pre-writing strokes, they kind of develop throughout. So, you know, when you're one, you're scribbling on a paper.
Right.
When you're 2 to 3, you're copying lines, vertical and horizontal, and so on and so forth through a triangle, a circle, a square, like all the different more complex shapes. And if you think about it, you know, each of these are very important to letter writing because you can't draw an A if you don't know how to draw a diagonal line and a horizontal line, because that's what creates an A.
Right.
So, you know, that's where a lot of my assessment starts. Like, my kid doesn't know how to write. I'm like, okay, well, let's bring it back and start on something simple. And, you know, develop those before we're just like, write your name or write ABC.
Right.
So it's very important, you know, to know how handwriting even works before you even just dive right into it. Right.
Yeah. That's so funny. If you've ever, I don't know if you've ever tried like calligraphy in your life.
No.
it's really funny when you first like start looking at it, because I think there are like, I'm not good at it. I've only tried it like once in my life, but there's like four or five different kinds of strokes that are, you know, within calligraphy. And so I never would have sat and thought about that with handwriting, that you have those pre-writing strokes that go along with understanding the concept of a letter, even to begin with.
Yeah.
But like if as an adult, like having that idea of like starting calligraphy and like really going back to square one and having specific strokes that you have to follow, like that totally makes sense for me now. But I never would have thought of that as a kid, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. And like most kids who come to us, it's like everything else is just developing.
Right.
And like you wouldn't think like handwriting gets taught in school. It's not a developmental thing, right?
Right.
So it's the same thing where parents are like, oh, I wouldn't have even thought like that. And it's just so similar to so many other things. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So what kind of like handwriting warrants the help of an OT? What do you see before they come in?
Mm-hmm. So the main concern that I hear a lot from parents or teachers, you know, cause we do have like a preschool here on campus. So oftentimes we get referrals from there as well.
Right.
So it's the main concern would be legibility. Like I have no idea what this kid is writing.
Okay.
You know, they still hold their pencil, you know, in their fist. And we discussed that a little bit later. We're going to chat about it, but, those would be kind of the two main things. Like, I don't know what you're writing, and I know they should not still be holding the pencil like this, but they are. And so what we do as occupational therapists is we take that. And then, like, as I said before, we dive a little bit deeper into, like, okay, can they copy those pre-writing strokes? And if we've got that, you know, check done, then we move on to, you know, can they do their capital letters? Because capital letters always, always, always develop first. Which is another thing that parents, you know, don't always know. But yeah, because if you think about a capital letter, so like A, B, C, let's just do that. Those are more similar to those pre-writing strokes of like the simple lines, the simple curves. And then you get into like lowercase B and D. It's like, okay, well, those are like very similar and very hard for kids to like
differentiate,
develop for, you know, differentiate would be the word. And then like, you know, Q's are weird and J's, like what are all these different things? So you always, always, always want to start with capital letters. So then, you know, you go pre-writing strokes, the capital letters, and then it's like, okay, they've got that down. Let's move on to lowercase. And then you're kind of observing or assessing how they're forming those letters. You know, typically it's you want to form top to bottom. You don't want to go bottom to top. So you're just kind of assessing that. And then, you know, are they using good spacing or are they all right on top of each other? Do they have like no spatial awareness? And then is it straight? You know, or are they following the line of the paper or are they writing as if, you know, they're going up a hill or down a hill, right? So those few things, you know, you come with that overarching, like, I can't understand what they're writing. So like, let's dive a little bit deeper. And that's kind of where you would start.
Okay. So what age do you like normally see?
You know, that's a big education piece that I've been discovering since working here, because a lot of times, like, people will be like 3 years old and they're like, my kid can't write his name. I'm like, hold on, they shouldn't be needing to write their name.
Don't need it.
So, like, you know, the rule of thumb, the CDC loves to put these like
hard numbers
and hard like parents freak out, you know, and my kid can't write his name and it says they should be at 6 years old and they can't do that. And I'm like, let's take a breath, you know, like, and so, you know, by that 5 to 6 age of like that quote unquote school age that everybody likes to call it, kids should be able to write their first name. And the reason the first name comes first is because they see it on their desk at school. They spell it during circle time at school. They see it on their backpack. You know, it's the first like exposure to letters that they ever have. So typically by that 5 to 6 age, if they're not able to write their name in those capital letters, not with appropriate casing on the letters of like upper and lower, that would be kind of warranted to come to me and, and see. But any younger than that, you know, unless like, and this is like a diamond in the rough, but unless parents understand pre-writing strokes and they know that their kids aren't developing them. Yeah, sure. Come on by. But that doesn't always happen. It's usually like the kids come to me between the ages of, you know, 5 to 7. Let's put a big buffer on it. And they're like, oh, they can't do anything. And then we discover through writing, and then we discover X, Y, Z, versus like the other way around.
Good to know. Cause I was going to say, I feel like it's probably like that elementary school age, but I'm positive that parents bring in their 3-year olds too.
They do. Or the preschool like sends them and I'm like, just not, I understand, you know, I get it, but it's just not, it's not there. Like and it shouldn't be. You know, like they're not behind. They're just, they're just developing little munchkins, you know, they're doing their thing.
They're doing their thing.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a couple of these things before, but what is it that makes, oh no, wait, we mentioned the non-neatness of the handwriting. So like you said, like going up a mountain or going downhill, all that kind of stuff. So what makes it so difficult for students to have the neat handwriting going straight across the paper?
Yeah. So, oftentimes like we can see it a lot in like they have difficulties with like visual motor or like spatial awareness. Okay. So oftentimes if the child has like letters right on top of each other, mm-hmm. you might see in the classroom, like in a normal environment, they might be like right up on somebody, or they might bump into things. Like when they're walking out the door, they bump their shoulder consistently on the door frame. And you're constantly having to remind them like, hey, you know, personal space, or hey, like watch out for that object there. And so, you know, that spatial awareness translates into not even understanding where their body is in space. Because if they don't even know where their body is, they're not even going to know maybe even where to start on the paper, or where to fit letters or sentences or words, you know, on the paper. And then like when kids are riding, you know, uphill, it's more of like what we call visual motor integration in occupational therapy. And what that is where it's almost like hand-eye coordination, but it's like the communication between the hands and the eyes.
Right.
And that's going to allow us to be able to, you know, as kids get older, copy from a board, you know, in a very typical school setting, but also just to maybe copy what's on the paper, or copy the letter of the week off of the paper that they're doing. And challenges there or deficits in that visual motor integration are going to lead to things like orienting on the paper or copying appropriately and things like that. Cause oftentimes, you know, if kids can't do the back and forth, they might be looking at the R and then not really understanding where to move their hand.
Right.
And then write on the line below. And those are both going to cause, you know, challenges or messiness in handwriting.
Right. Yeah.
That
is really interesting, like the spatial awareness portion of it. Because I, of course, like if you see something on a piece of paper here, like if you don't have any of the spatial awareness, like there's no way you'd be able to get further down the paper. And that's just such an interesting like concept that I never would have thought of.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's like, you know, handwriting seems like such a small detail, and it's like, you got to work on handwriting. And a lot of times I'm talking to parents and it's like, no, we have to work on, you know, going through an obstacle course because they need to navigate how their body, you know, reacts to different things, or we need to work on, I don't know, matching, because their perceptual skills aren't there. And if they don't know how to match, they're not going to know how to copy something. And then in the other light of like that weakness we were talking about too, if children have that very light handwriting, it's typically because they're weaker in their hands or their fingers. Mm-hmm. So you might use too, like compensatory strategies there, instead of just like exercise the hands. Right. You could also put like a piece of sandpaper or a piece of like something bumpy, because it provides again that tactile feedback of like, oh, if I press hard enough, my writing's going to be bumpy, but that's the right thing to do. And you can kind of start to fade that. And then children will learn tactilely by themselves, instead of like this overarching figure telling them, you know, you got to write harder.
Right.
And then on the flip side, if a child writes too hard, you know, we love those, let's just break the pencil or let's push the, you know, if they're writing with an Expo marker, how it pushes in, you know?
Yes.
you got to make sure that they're not going to get too angry with you, but you have them write with a mechanical pencil. Because those, you know, you could start with the thicker lead of like the 0.5 or whatever, 0.9.
Yeah.
And you can kind of start to fade into that typical 0.7 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm like going back to my college days here, but, it gives them that like tactile or proprioceptive feedback of understanding, you know, how their force is affecting their writing.
Oh, yeah.
And children tend to learn a little bit better. Versus telling them what to
do. Yeah, that's interesting. I was telling Aubrey right before this, I got to babysit my niece this weekend and it was a lot of fun. And there was one time where she had one of those tiny markers that comes with like coloring sets, and she pushed it all the way in to like the marker nib, but it was after like coloring for many hours. Mm-hmm. She was having a great time. She was like, uh-oh. I said, it's okay. We'll find you a new one.
Right. Right. But she's probably won't ever do that again because she's like, oh, right. My marker. Right.
Right. Oh, it's so funny. Okay. So yeah. The mechanical pencil thing is really interesting because if you ever, like, once you start writing with one, it is very different to a regular pencil. The lead does mm-hmm. break a lot more easily. And I can only imagine like how quickly kids probably learn from that.
Yeah, because they're like, well, I don't want to keep pressing the eraser to get more right. lead. Like, I'm just going to start to change my writing, you right. know? Like, it's very challenging. And even I get annoyed when the pencil keeps breaking, oh, yeah. you know? So just imagine, you know, a little kid. And that's why you have to, you got to be careful, right? You got to make sure, you know, the child isn't going to get too angry and right. be turned off from writing.
Right.
But it is a good way if other things aren't working to kind of just throw it in there, see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So what other things do students like need to be aware of? Like other than obviously like pencil, like the like weight of their writing, all of that to mm-hmm. help improve their handwriting?
Yeah. So we can kind of start with what a lot of people start with is pencil graph.
Yeah.
So that's a tricky one, and it can be a little bit controversial in the OT world, because some, you know, some therapists are like, fix it, fix it, fix it. And mm-hmm. others are like, you know, let's just see what happens, because yeah. if their handwriting is working, let's see what else we could do. Right.
Right.
So I'll kind of get into a little bit. So, you know, again, as we're learning here, it's all developmental. So pencil graph is also developmental.
Right.
When you're 1 to 2, you're going to have that fisted graph.
Right.
And you're just going to rock on that paper, like till the cows come home. Right. It's mm-hmm. That's just what you're going to do. And as you develop to about 5 or 6, you know, that school age, you'll get that more refined tripod graph that we all know and love on a typical pencil.
Right.
And sometimes that develops and sometimes it doesn't. And so when children come to me really young and, you know, they're 3 maybe, and we're working on coloring and they're still doing that fisted graph.
Yeah.
I can work on that
because
they haven't quite developed their writing expose, right. what have you. So we can do things like holding a shorter crayon, because you can't, if you have a short crayon, you can't hold that in a fist. It's not
right.
going to work.
Right.
You can put a piece of Play-Doh kind of in between the pad of their thumb and their palm
oh.
to kind of encourage that open space.
Right.
And it's going to kind of force them to use more of a tripod graph than a fisted graph.
Right.
Those are a couple things. But then on the flip side, if a child comes to me when they're 10 years old, like I had a child come to me a few weeks ago and that's what they need to work on is handwriting, and they still hold the pencil in this weird way.
Yeah.
They're 10. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to change that. You know,
right.
like we all walk up the stairs, you know, the same way. And if yeah. somebody else came to us and said, you're rocking wrong, I'm not going to be able to fix that, you yeah. know? And so when they come to me and it's fisted grasp and they're like, my hand gets so tired, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, so maybe we'll just work on some endurance strategies or right. use a slant board to give that weakness a little bit of help. You know, let's try that, because we're not changing your grip.
It's, right.
it's just not going to happen. So that's kind of the challenging part with pencil grip. But
yeah.
And then also adaptive paper. So we call it bright lines paper. So ooh. What bright lines paper is, it's really cool. It's thicker, you know, it's probably okay. maybe like a 1/2 inch to 1 inch of line.
Okay.
And right down the middle, there's a dotted line down the middle mm-hmm. of each line.
Right.
And then below that dotted line, it's solid yellow or solid blue.
Oh.
Yeah. And so what that does is it gives that visual of, like, say you're writing mainly lowercase letters, these are helpful for.
Right.
So you know, your A's, your C's, your E's, you want those all small. Mm-hmm. And so what you can tell the child is when you're writing A, C, E, I, O, keep it in the yellow or keep it in the blue, whatever right. color the paper has to be. And it provides them that feedback of like, oh, my little letters need to stay here.
Right.
And then you can kind of slowly fade that to, you don't have, maybe you don't have the color, the solid color, but you just have the dotted line,
right.
you know, and then you start to fade to thinner paper. Cause obviously once they get older, they're with college ruled and things like right. that. So you want to start to fade that, but those adaptive lines, again, that visual feedback is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
So that's something that they can utilize too.
That's very cool. I've seen the, yeah. obviously the thick line with the dot in the center, mm-hmm. but I've never seen like the highlighted portion so that you get that, the little lowercase help with lowercase letters. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely one thing that parents are like, ooh, let's try that. You know? Yeah. And then similarly, like they could use, like with, there's also like with like letter formation, you want to do top to bottom. So there's different rules and like sayings that you could say, like all the letters start at the top, then you draw a line down, touch bottom, pick it up. You know, with different yeah. like with your B's, it's like start at the top, go down, jump up, two humps, you know, like
yeah.
little rhymes of things that you can kind of help children with to help with that formation as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you have any, we can like chat about it later, but if you had any mm-hmm. recommendations for like the fun rhyming songs.
Yeah. I don't have them off the top of my head, but for our lowercase letters, we use what we call like tall man letters, short man letters, and diver letters.
Oh.
So yeah. So what that is like tall man letters are things like T, L, D, B. They all are going to touch the top line. It right. is kind of like, and then our short man letters are what I was kind of saying before, A, C, O, U, V. They're all going to stay below that dotted line or right. within the colored line. And then our diver letters, P, J, G, Q, right. they dive below the bottom line of the paper. So that is one that I know off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's fun. I like this too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now yeah. we've got kind of like to the meat of it. So what are the mm-hmm. exercises that parents can do at home that will help their kiddo improve their handwriting?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of fun activities you can do and that I recommend parents would do because it's, you know, they go to school for 8 hours and they write all day.
Yeah.
They come to me typically right after right. school. And they write more.
Right.
So, you know, we want to make handwriting fun because handwriting can be very challenging for children.
Yeah.
So if parents do these fun activities, then it'll kind of help in the other environments that they have to write in. So one of the main things that I love to have parents do are like movement activities. So creating an obstacle course. So you can make pillow fort or if you have like couch cushions or anything like that. And what you're doing is not only teaching them that spatial awareness because they have to move through the obstacle course when they're not, you know, falling off or like bumping into their siblings, maybe if they right. have siblings that you can incorporate. But you can also teach them direction, which is important to know for like, you know, the letter goes down or the letter starts on the top.
Right.
And you can say like, go to the left of the couch cushion and then go under the trampoline and go over the puzzle or, you know, whatever you're using. And you can kind of incorporate all of that and it's going to help with spacing of the letters, letter formation, because you're teaching them those directionality.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's a great way to keep them busy while you're trying to cook dinner. Or
exactly.
Get some energy out. And then also mazes. Like you can find some pretty good ones online. Like if you just search like easy mazes, you know, they don't have to be complex.
Right.
They can have an easy start and finish because we're not trying to challenge them.
Right.
Because the point isn't the maze itself, it's teaching them pencil control. Okay. Right. So most kids, you know, that have difficulty with like staying within those lines, you know, they don't understand pencil control. They're kind of just writing to write, you know, right. They're not. So what that maze does is like, you know, okay, stay, like, don't touch any of the black lines, and get to the other side, and you can use cool things like get the snowman to the rest of his snow buddy,
right,
into the igloo, or they make some great ones like online. Teachers Pay Teachers OT, right, toolbox is another great one. And what you can also do is write, or have, if that child needs that visual cue, you can highlight the outside of the maze in yellow or blue to, yeah, kind of, and it also mimics, like, you know, the bright line paper that we were discussing.
Right.
And that can kind of translate a little bit better, you know, that close approximation to like, oh, this is what they mean when they say stay within this line, you know? Mm-hmm. And then kind of like the meat and potatoes of handwriting, in my eyes, is that it is a multi-sensory approach.
Yeah.
So the more they interact with those different letters or numbers or whatever they're writing, the more they're going to improve. So yeah, if you do like, I love to do these alphabet exercises where, you know, A is for arm rolls. Okay. So you got the A and the A.
Right.
Or you can even take it a step further and you can do A, and you could create some, you know, you could create your body as an A. Right. And then you go to the table or you lay on your belly and you write A. Okay. Yeah. So you've interacted with it in verbal, and mm-hmm, you're kind of matching like A is for arm rolls. You're doing the arm rolls. So you've got the motive, the movement piece of it.
Right.
And then you're writing it.
Right.
So there's three different ways that your body has interacted with that letter.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to start learning how to write that a little easier.
Yeah.
Another great one, a little bit messy, so parents don't love me for this one. But I'm an OT, so I love messes. But you could make a sensory bin out of rice or oatmeal, or some people do like hot cocoa around, ooh, like the holidays, yeah, you know, something cool like that. And you hide letters in them. So a lot of times I'll tell parents to get like fridge magnets, like little, right, fridge magnets, and you put them in there. And then what you can do is, so you say, all right, find A. Or if they don't really know, you know, if that's going to take too long, you can just find whatever letter, you know. Right. And you put it, what I'll have parents do is get like a magnet board. Typically Expo marker boards will be magnetic.
Right.
And they take the letter out of the magnet board or out of the rice bin, and they put it on the Expo marker. Mm-hmm. And then they either like trace it with their finger, or they write it in the sensory bin, or they, right, write it on the paper next to them.
Yeah.
And then now you've got the tactile input, right? Right. You're finding the letter, you're putting it up there, now you're tracing it.
Yeah.
So it's another sensory system that's interacting with that letter.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. And it gets the kids involved. Like, handwriting is boring.
Right.
It just is. I'm not, right, going to sugarcoat that. So any fun way you can do it, right, kids are going to be like, wait a second, that's actually kind of cool, you, yeah, know, and they're going to start to try a little harder.
Right.
And then lastly, another multi-sensory approach, this one really is messy, is shaving cream.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you put it on, you know, you put it on a table. You know, maybe you do this one in the summer where you could be outside,
right,
and just hose it off at the end. But you put it on that table and, you know, you either are hiding those letters again, or you're just having them write the letter in the shaving frame.
Right.
And that's another, you know, kids don't love to be messy. Sometimes some kids love being messy.
Right.
But that will help also with like that sensory piece of like not liking things on their hands.
Yeah.
You know, if that could help too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are all, like you said, they're a lot of fun. And I feel like it does give them something that's like, they feel rewarded in a way with something that's like exciting. Like I like the sensory bin because it's kind of like find the hidden prize almost. And so it, you know, gets them excited and then they're like, oh, I guess I'll write it. Like I'm already on this train. Like might as well keep going.
Exactly. And the great thing with the sensory bin is you could hide like anything in there, you know, like their favorite dinosaur, their Legos, like, and then you could even interact with it and like, okay, put the A on the dinosaur. All right, well, let's write the A, you know, if they're having difficulty, because it's like, if they're engaged, like you said, it's like, eh, well, might as well just write the A. I don't know why she's asking me to do that. But I'm just going to do it. Sure. You know, why not? The more exposure, the better, you know, is our goal. So.
Exactly. That's all. That's very fun. So who all do you think would benefit from those specific exercises? Is it only kids with handwriting trouble or?
I think the beauty of occupational therapy is that a lot of people can benefit, or a lot of children can benefit from it, even without a disability or a diagnosis, right? Like a lot of kids, you know, handwriting is challenging and they're just going to kind of do it to get out of it potentially, you know? A lot of these exercises can be done with neurotypical and atypical children. And you know, like obviously kids with autism is like my, you know, main diagnosis and population that we work with. So a lot of my ideas kind of are multifaceted to them of like, most of them have sensory issues. So we're going to work on that and let's throw in handwriting. So a lot of my ideas kind of stem from that. But these can be used for any kid. It's that's the beauty of it, you know? Yeah.
And do you think kids with dysgraphia, like this is mainly what starts to get them, back on track?
Yeah, I do, because, you know, our brains work on like repetition, right? So the more, and which is why that multisensory approach is so, so important, because the more they interact with it and the more they repeat things, the better they're going to become. And it's all about like generalizing it. Those children with dysgraphia have difficulties, like, you know, reading it, interacting with it in any sort of way. So interacting with it in a variety of ways is going to help with that generalization as well. So this is a really good, you know, start to help that.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I think that was my last question for you. I don't know if you had anything you wanted to tack on.
No, just, you know, give your kids grace. Handwriting is really hard. So, you know, and just try, you know, if things aren't working, you know, try to look at it in a different way. Because if it's not working, just practice, you know, maybe start to peel back the layers, and you might be able to help them a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, thank you so, so much for being here. This has been awesome. And I think you've given people some really good resources to, you know, go through and try with their kiddos, and some really fun activities that I feel like even parents might get into.
Yes. Never know.
Yeah. Thanks again for being here, Aubrey.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to the audience for listening. Make sure to subscribe and leave us a little rating and review. It helps other folks find the podcast, and we'll chat with you next time.